Hello and welcome to the D1 Softball Podcast. I'm your host, Tara Henry, joined by Rhiannon Potke. As always, we are excited to bring you the best and best in college softball. After the show, head on over to d1softball.com for all the latest news, scores, stories, and more. If you've subscribed today, you can use code PODCAST20. That's PODCAST20 for 20% off an annual subscription. We are so excited today for today's episode that features Kaylee Rafter, the new head coach of Softball Canada and volunteer assistant coach of Florida State University. Welcome to season 2, episode 5 of the D1 Softball Podcast. Ree, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing good. The weather is turning in my neck of the woods. It's getting colder, which not always great, but I like the change of season. So got to kind of suck it up. But otherwise, doing good. Just having fun doing all these fall reports and talking to the coaches who are, some of them are done with fall. Some of them are in the middle. Some of them are towards the end. So it's really fun to get these updates on these teams.
And we are finally in November. We turned the calendar to November 1st. We're taping this on Wednesday, November 3rd, and we are rolling out fall reports. Every day we've got a new fall report up on the site on d1softball.com. Ree did a fantastic report on the Tennessee Vols. Karen Weekly there. We know Ralph retired last season, so they've got a little bit of a new look. And we actually got to see them live national television, which was great to see them playing a fall ball game against Kentucky. What do you got, Ree, on the 2022 Tennessee Vols?
Yeah, definitely a lot of changes there for a program that's not used to tons of change in terms of especially the coaching staff realm. Like you said, Karen's now in charge on her own. She was co-head coach. Now she's just head coach, no co. But she did bring in some pretty big hires with Chris Malvo, especially from Missouri, whose specialty is hitting. And we saw that Kentucky game they played, the fall ball, that hitting was coming around. And when I spoke with Karen, she was very excited about the progress they were making in terms of more power. And definitely we saw that explosion there with Kiki Malloy coming back and leading that charge. And they got some transfers in to help bolster the pitching depth, which was sorely, sorely needed because Ashley Rogers, shouldered way too much of the load sometimes. And she's been a little bit injured over the season. So they got Aaron Edmondson from Texas Tech and Riley White from Texas. So that should be good within the circle. And they've got a few, obviously, other transfers. They have a Leach family tradition there, as we know. Aubrey Leach was an All-American, and now Kelsey Leach, her sister, will be transferring there in January from Texas Tech, a catcher, which will help replace Allie Shipman, who left for, as we know, Alabama. And to be like 2 weeks ago, the Leach has twin sisters who both committed to Tennessee. So there's going to be more Leach sisters coming in the pipeline, but definitely got some excitement and some new energy from that program is what I'm hearing. Just talking to Karen, just feeling like there's just kind of a really good vibe in that whole program. And they look on the right track. Now again, it's fall and Ashley was pitching against Kentucky, and Ashley pitching against anyone is tough, but the bats look like they're coming around, and they have, Ivy Davis back at shortstop. So pretty good. And they have some young freshman talent they're excited about as well. So it's looking positive for the Vols in the fall so far and heading into 2022.
Yes, and we both caught that game, and it was Halloween themed. So there's a spider web around the pitcher's mound. It was boo. There's boo on. I mean, the grounds crew did an incredible job for that Halloween game. So that was fun to see. So that's the Tennessee Vols. Then we've got Louisville. Brady Vernon has a report up on Louisville and Coach April. She's actually hired a new hitting coach over there, Bryce Neal out of Bucknell. And they return Cameron Greenwood and Taylor Roby. Looks like they're punching ahead there at Louisville. And check out that report by Brady Vernon up on d1softball.com. So that's our second fall report. And then Ree, we'll let you speak a little bit about Mizzou and kind of what you're seeing Mizzou in the fall with Larissa Anderson and her squad.
Yeah, Mizzou's got a very experienced team coming back. Every starter returns. They can hit the heck out of the ball, as we saw last year, and that's all those people are coming back. So that should be another very offensively explosive team. We saw Jenna Laird have a great freshman season, SEC Freshman of the Year. Crazy numbers for her, and just another year under her belt. But, you know, the thing is that young pitching staff, too, they started to find their form, I think, a little bit towards the end there last season. Got a little bit, you know, we saw. But I think just having some experience, there's not really one clear-cut ace on the staff per se, but they have a lot of good young arms that now have experience under their belt. So with offense, not really shouldn't be an issue because they usually are really good offensively. It's going to be really pitching and defense that maybe, you know, will be the key down the stretch as we see with that, because they can score with the best of them. But they do really the discipline was something that Larissa really stressed in terms of, you know, they're very free swingers. They took a lot of, you know, just took their cuts last year, but she wants to try to cut down on those strikeout numbers a little bit more. So that's something that they've really focused on this year. They use that virtual reality for hitting, which is pretty cool. And so they still, you know, they're doing that a lot last year. That'll continue, but really going to, you know, try to be more disciplined with the strikeout numbers there.
So that is the Mizzou Tigers with the Larissa Anderson. And Graham Hayes had a great piece feature this week on Morgan Zirkle and her time with AU Pro Sports. And, you know, she didn't leave to go on vacation after she spent her 6 weeks with Athletes Unlimited. Said she jumped in her car and made sure to get down to Miami and get to work with the Redhawks there in Oxford. So check that story out. Great story on Morgan Zirkle.
Yeah, and let's be stressed. It wasn't Miami, the tropical Miami you said. It was Oxford, Miami of Ohio. So there was not like she was like, well, I'll just cruise down and still get the sun. She was going somewhere where it wasn't like, you know, on a vacation. So Miami of Ohio.
Yeah, thanks for that clarification, Ree.
I know people must know that Miami does not have a softball program, but some may not. So we just want to be clear, you know, University of Miami does not. That would be, you know, it'd be great if they would add one. We were definitely a proponent of that. But right now it's just Miami of Ohio.
So check out that Morgan Zirkle by Graham Hayes. That's pretty much the news of the week. Not too much happening in the softball world other than everybody clicking along. And there's some fall games this week. I'll be heading up to UCLA for the UCLA Long Beach State scrimmage on Friday at Easton Stadium. And I think we can just get into our guest this week. Ree, who do we have joining the podcast?
Yeah, Kaylee Rafter. We mentioned it last week on the pod that she got named, you know, the Canadian softball team national team head coach, longtime player for that team, really one of their stalwarts, a catcher, just as, you know, really, really key cornerstone of that team for so long. Her and Danielle really had a good relationship there with the battery and got the medal this year and decided to retire. But that opening came about. And so we wanted to find out how, you know, how the process of this opportunity came and why she decided to take it, and kind of a little bit talk about her time at Florida State and in the college, how the college game has helped her and what her aspirations are maybe in that realm too. Really had a good time just talking to her and learning more about her background and how she, you know, she studied criminology in college. So interesting that she went into coaching, you know, so we talked a little bit about that, but just a really fun conversation. Really bright up and coming coach. I mean, I think she's going to be one that's going to be, we're going to see her when the time is right, when she wants to get a pretty good head coaching job in the college ranks. But just, she talks about how, you know, Canada tries to find some of their players and how the college system also benefits Canada in that sense. So really had a fun time talking with her on the podcast for this one. I think every listener is going to really like it and get some insight that they maybe didn't know before. And we are now joined on the D1 Softball Podcast by Kaylee Rafter. The Florida State Volunteer Coach was recently named the head coach of the Canadian Softball National Team, a huge gig, which is really exciting. And Rafter's a catcher who won a bronze medal with Canada at this summer's Tokyo Olympics. Two-time Olympian, has competed with Canada's national team since 2007. She played 3 seasons at the University of Detroit and 1 season at Florida State. During that 2009 season at FSU, she hit .332 with 11 doubles, 11 home runs, and 42 RBIs, and was a first-team All-ACC selection. Kaylee, thank you so much for joining the D1 Softball Podcast. We really appreciate your presence. I know you're busy coaching and now coaching two different teams.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Anytime. Glad to be here.
Yeah, well, first, I'd love to kind of get, you know, we saw you as a player competing just recently, and take us through the process of getting this opportunity as a head coach. I think it kind of, you know, they just named a coach. I don't think many of us were aware of kind of the process that went into it. So I'd love to get some background on you, how that opportunity came about.
Yeah, they actually just put out a call for coaches after the Olympics. They knew our head coach, Mark Smith, who's been with the program for 12 years, decided that he knew that the Olympics was going to be his time to retire. So he retired pretty shortly after, and they put out a call for coaches across Canada, and they advertised the position. So kind of after thinking about it and what the next steps were, I knew that it was probably going to be something that I was interested in doing. So I threw my name in the hat and went through the interview process and got to kind of do the whole full Zoom interview process with all the higher ups at Softball Canada. And thankfully they decided that I was the right fit to take the team going forward.
Was this always a goal for you? Was this something that you thought you aspired to do? And how long has it been a goal for you?
Yeah, I mean, I knew coaching was probably going to be in my career. And I had spent 3 years coaching at the University of Virginia and 1 year at the University at Buffalo. And I knew that coaching was probably going to be in my future, whether it be at the NCAA level. But the more I thought about it, like we put so much into this program for the last 12 years and kind of seen it through this transition from being an Olympic sport in 08 and trying to hang on through the COVID year and then into 2021. So I knew it was in a really good spot, and it wouldn't sit well with me if someone that wasn't passionate about it, or maybe hadn't been through that struggle. Like, I wanted to keep the momentum going. So thinking about it after and kind of letting the Olympics decompress on my mind a little bit, I decided that it was going to be the right move for me to try to go for it and see if I was the right person to take it coming forward.
Well, that's awesome. Did you feel like it may, I mean, obviously your familiarity, did that help a little bit in knowing kind of the ins and outs and even the people involved in the hiring process a little bit?
Yeah. And I think you just get a feel for how the programs run and being in it for so long. And I think as one of the veteran members, like, I had a pretty close relationship with the coaching staff and the coaches that were there. So I got to see the inside of a lot of what happened and how they strategically did things. So I felt like it was in a really good place to take it over and understand what they've been through and also kind of their vision for the future. But a really good time for me to also put my own stamp on it as we have a little period here, hopefully before the next cycle of 2028 in Los Angeles. So it all kind of worked out well for kind of the transition period. But it was just really thankful for kind of the timing and the opportunity.
Yeah, we were kind of talking before we started this podcast about kind of the changeover that's going to be happening with a lot of the veterans. You know, you, Danielle, Lori, as we all know, has been a frequent podcast guest, kind of stepping aside likely. And how is that going to be? I mean, how are you going to try to build that infrastructure back up and kind of replace those? Like you said, you have a little bit of time till feasibly the only next time we can be in the Olympics as a sport.
Yeah, I mean, I think for sure for us, like, I think the NCAA right now is the most competitive environment that softball's played at. So we're going to try to identify Canadians in the NCAA system and really get a good feel for who's playing at a high level. What are they doing in the NCAA? We also have a Canadian system. So just trying to identify players as young as possible and get them in the system so we can develop them and have a coaching staff that's built around the development piece. Cause we know, like, numbers wise, we're a smaller nation. We have about 40 million people in our country. We don't have the numbers that maybe a US with 300 million can roll out for softball. So we got to be pretty strategic with how we develop and who we get in the pipeline and kind of the culture we want to have around our team.
And you talk about that. We obviously, being a D1 softball podcast, and our, you know, focus is a lot of the college realm. How much has that strategically helped Canada, and how much do you try to encourage players maybe aren't even yet in the college pipeline to try to take their talents down to the United States and maybe get a little bit more refinement and development?
Yeah. I mean, that's a huge focus for us. Like, we try to get a lot of Canadians, thankfully, they know how good the American system is. It is being so close. They know that a lot of their goals, even growing up in high school as a softball player, are to go to get a scholarship or play Division I softball. So they know how valuable it is. And I think you get a lot of Canadians that we don't play a lot. Like, we play a lot in the summer months. So we have a lot of times our season goes 3 months in the summer. So there's a lot of really athletic kids that have played basketball, have played softball, but aren't really refined in the softball area. So you see them go down to a Division I school where they're going to play 60 games a season. And now all of a sudden you kind of match the softball gameplay with a lot of athleticism and a lot of just natural physical skills. And we see a lot of late bloomers in the NCAA system. So trying to build those connections with the both players and coaches in the NCAA. So they have that little bit of a pipeline and kind of build that excitement around the college game is huge for us.
How much has the, you mentioned when you were saying that you've been at Buffalo and Virginia and now at Florida State, those stints in the college level, how has that helped develop your own coaching?
I mean, it's just the college game, the funding that we have, the facilities we have, just the ability to play softball and coach softball for 10 months of the year at a really high level. Like how much like being in practices daily and hey, maybe will this work? Let's try it. We got time to try it. And then you refine your skills as a coach and you really start to get like what works and the ability to get creative because you have time to be creative and think outside the box a little bit more because we have the structures in place. Like, I don't think people realize like how much being in the game all the time starts to build, hey, that showed up. Like, how do we practice that? Well, let's try this way. And then it doesn't work. And then we're back to the drawing board. How else can we refine this? And all of a sudden, 3 years later, the system is just running so much smoother and so much more efficiently, and you're better able to develop kids faster. And that's kind of the name of the game when you get into these coaching environments. So, I mean, couldn't put a value on it for sure to that opportunity that I've had to be at those programs.
And now that you're, you know, you've hung up the catching gear for Canada for good. Is that now an aspiration? You're the head coach, obviously the national team, but is a college head coaching gig something that you're aspiring to?
Yeah, I think for right now, I'm definitely going to go all in to the Canadian for the next few years and then see kind of what happens through the next cycle. But I do think down the line, I'd love the opportunity to do that. But for right now, probably split my time a little bit. I think it's going to be really hard to, obviously Coach Tarr just being named to USA, she has a program established, but I think taking over a program and coaching a national team is a lot to ask. So probably for the foreseeable future, stay as a head coach, maybe as a volunteer and assistant, but eventually down the road, definitely if the opportunity presents itself, I'd love to get the chance to take over an NCAA program and be at the helm.
Yeah, you're still very young. I'm trying to pile everything on you right away. Like, here, just do it all.
Right, throw it on my back.
Might as well dive in the deep end. Now you speak, we were talking about, you know, the Canada and players developing up there. I would love to know how you got into softball. There's a rumor, you grew up in Ontario, kind of a rumor that your mom maybe lied to let you get into T-ball. Like, can you tell me how you got into the bat and ball sports?
Yeah, so I have an older brother. He's 5 years older than I am. So from the time I could remember, if he was doing something, I was doing something. So I would follow him around like the little sister that never let him out of my sight, and whatever he did, it just like jump in. So he played baseball. So obviously I wanted to play baseball. At the time there was a league, the only league that we could go to started as a 5-year-old. So in kindergarten. So my mom was like, oh, she's probably ready for it. So she just said, yeah, she's in kindergarten. I was pretty tall at the time. So she told him that I was in kindergarten and I got to play a year sooner. So I ended up playing a few years with T-ball and then got involved in baseball just because that was a little bit more competitive at the time. So actually a really good friend of mine, her and I played on the boys baseball team together for a while. And then I ended up making the switch over to softball, I think in sixth grade. So that was kind of my journey into the bat ball sports. Started with kind of following my brother and then ended up just carving my own path.
That's awesome. Yeah. That whole, we've heard those stories, you know, a few times where like kind of the fudge, the birth certificate type stuff, you know, which is in your case, man, you weren't older, you were younger. So that's, you know, you kind of rationalize that more. The safety.
I held my own though as a 4-year-old, no one would have known.
Man, a 4-year-old girl that's that big compared to the boys, then you had to be a pretty big kid. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
How did catching become your, you know, I have a fondness for catchers. I will admit that anytime when I have a no hitter, I talk about, I always mention the catcher. How did you get into that? How did catching become your passion?
Yeah, I think it started. So when we were in, I always had a pretty strong arm and I like to kind of touch the ball a lot. When we first got into baseball, that was the thing. Like people always stole. When kid pitch started, everyone would try to steal because they would take them forever to get rid of the ball. So I love the action back there being a catcher. So from the very beginning, I was one that was like, give me the gear, I'll throw it on. And head back there. And we had, thankfully, my first few years in baseball, some pretty good couple guys that were from our town that had gone and played AAA baseball, came back and helped us out. And I just, from the beginning, fell in love with the position and kind of found some other spots a little boring. Like I like the action. I got to touch the ball every time. And so I just kind of fell in love with it and never looked back. So I've been doing it since I was first in rookie ball. Like that was just my favorite spot to be on the field and stuck with it.
I'm sure you've caught some pretty good pitchers too in your day. And who are some of the ones maybe that you really established close relationships with over the years, being that bond is pretty strong?
Yeah, obviously Danielle's been one that we've kind of developed a really strong bond over the years, just playing, going through the battles. Any player, any teammates who go through the battles with Jenna Kyra, who pitched on her team, Lauren Bay, who pitched, I caught her in 08 Olympics as well. She came back for another run, but even players like Sarah Groenwegen, who pitched at Minnesota and who are still on the team now. But anytime you go through those battles with your pitching staff, like we've been through a lot since a lot of those players have been on the team since 2012. So we've had 9-10 years together to go through those ups and downs and time in the bullpen. So all of those teammates, I think we've built a really strong connection with and just kind of love how different they are. They all bring something completely different. And together we were able to do something pretty awesome.
Yeah. And there's just something that hits different about representing your country and having that bond too. You know, school's big thing with colleges, but just the country and that is just, it's just something, unless you're experienced, I don't think you can really put into words. Okay, we're going to let you go on this because I know, like, you're sitting in your office at FSU. You probably got to go, you know, game plan, fall ball, practice schedules, and recruiting and all that fun stuff. You studied criminology. You actually got a bachelor's and a master's degree in criminology.
I did.
I can't imagine that was like, okay, I'm going to be a coach. Let me study criminology with hope because I don't hope your kids ever get involved with it. You need a criminology background. But how did you choose that and kind of what did you think you might want to do with that when you did?
Yeah. So originally when I was at Detroit Mercy, there was no sports program. So when I kind of got into it, I said, I thought maybe could I be like a police officer after, and had no idea what I really wanted to do. So I ended up doing 3 years of criminal justice there. And then when I transferred to Florida State, the only thing I had credits to transfer at Florida State, I had a whole bunch of credits in criminology. So when I first got to Florida State as a senior transfer, they actually had a program where you could do, it's called the BS to MS. So as an undergrad, I was able to take grad classes as well. So I already had 12 credits of grad classes when I graduated with my master or with my undergrad. So at that point I said, you know what, like I might as well finish my master's and have it. And then once I got to the end of that, I was like, you know what, I really would like to try this. I think coaching's my route. So I ended up getting a master's in sports management as well. So I actually have two masters now, kind of just ended up happening. I was able to keep a job here and they helped me get through school. So I did a master's in sports manager after, because I knew then that I was like, I'm pretty sure I want to be a coach. And I think that's the right path for me. So a little bit of a circle path, but I eventually got to, I think, a spot where I'm supposed to be at.
Well, yeah, that is, now did you find the criminology studying, did you enjoy it? Was it fascinating? Did you learn a lot?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was, I mean, it's human beings and it's people. And I think criminology is a lot of the study of why people commit crime. So like, why do people, maybe, is it lower income areas, or what are they motivated by? Like, you kind of get into a lot of human behavior and motivators and just why people do the things they do, which I think is coaching a lot of times. Like, why are we making decisions the way we are, and what motivates people to make those decisions? So I think there's so much carryover, and you see so much, you can draw a lot of connections between all those things. So fascinated me. I thoroughly enjoyed it. But then I think I knew at the end that I wanted to get into coaching, and I kind of went that route.
Yeah, I got a bachelor's in psychology and fascinated. And I said, like, man, unless you live under a rock, you're going to deal with people and you're going to want to know how they're thinking. And it honestly translated into my journalism. If you're formulating questions, you know, how yep. brain, and I know criminology has some of those same kind of like, you know, how do people tick basically,
yeah.
right?
So yeah, for sure.
Well, this is awesome. I know you're like I said, your schedule is very busy. We really appreciate you joining the D1 Softball Podcast. You are welcome to come back anytime. Hopefully we can get some updates and, you know, maybe have some of those Canadian D1 players on our podcast as well. You can let us know if there's some good ones to reach out to.
Awesome.
Well, love thank it. You. And congratulations. We'll look forward to it. And everyone pay attention. Make sure you follow Canada's national team, obviously, because you'll see a lot of recognizable faces and some new blood in there. So we're excited to see who yep. emerges.
For sure. I love it. Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
Kaylee Rafter, head coach of Softball Canada and volunteer assistant coach at Florida State. Great interview. Always amazing to hear her insights and her experience, international experience, and how she's bringing that to, you know, the Division I level.
Yeah, it was a really fun interview. I really enjoyed it. And she just, a lot of good information in there. And like I said, we're going to see her, you know, in the college game for a long time if she wants to be. And we appreciate her making some time. She had to squeeze this, you know, there's so much stuff. She's doing fall ball practices, and she's obviously still scouting for Canada, trying to find those next up and comers, because there was a lot of retirements and they're trying to get, you know, pumped back up for when it hopefully, fingers crossed, returns to the Olympics.
Yeah. And speaking of finding new recruits and looking for not only international ball, but let's talk a little bit about Division I softball and the change that we're seeing, Ree, in terms of these fall camps and how coaches are using these fall camps a little bit more for recruiting.
Yeah, that's something I've been noticing the last few months. I mean, obviously last year there were no camps because of COVID. So there's just been a proliferation. I mean, I'm there are always a lot of camps, but there just seems like there's almost double what there have been. You see programs every day promoting, like, you know, fall camp, winter camp, hitting camp, pitching camps. It's like every single theme camp you can imagine. And I was like, dang, this seems like more. And I really do believe it is. And I think it's a combination of A, like I said, COVID not being able to do any camps last year. And that is a needed source of income for a lot of coaches, especially volunteer assistant coaches. But it was already kind of on the rise since we had that change in the recruiting rule where you cannot contact recruits until their junior year. A lot of coaches want to identify players earlier than that. And what's the best way to do it? Watch them in a camp, because that's really the only way you can do it. So they're getting these players on campus early. They can't recruit them, but they can watch them. They can teach them. The recruits can get an idea of what the staff is like. They can see the facilities. It's kind of a loophole way to get around a little bit of the early recruiting. I think we're seeing a lot of staffs realize that that's a great way to do this. And it's kind of an end around on the early recruiting. Obviously it's, you know, less pressurized type, because it's just supposed to be a fun camp, but it's really a good way for exposure. And I think we're going to see that continue. And if everyone's noticing more camps, I think that is like I said, COVID was part of it, but I think it's going to continue just for the fact of the recruiting part of it, where you get these kids on your campus more exposed. That used to always play into it, but now without being able to talk to them earlier, it's even more emphasized. So I don't know if everyone else has noticed, but I've sure noticed. I'm like, dang, there's like a camp a week at these places now. Like, have your pick, you know? People are coming, so they wouldn't be doing it if people weren't coming. So if you're noticing that, if you're seeing that, if you've been to a camp, you probably, you know, if you have any questions about them, let us know. We'll try to find out answers. But I think it's a great thing. I mean, the more you can get kids on campuses, great. But I think there is that reason, because they want to see these kids before their junior year and kind of get to know a little bit about their personalities as best you can in a camp setting.
Yeah. And I spoke to Stacey Newman Denise at San Diego State, and they were talking about the same thing in terms of getting kids in, having these camps. And, you know, it's really an introduction to that team culture. Like you said, it's an introduction to the coaching staff. It's an introduction to the players, to the university. So it is a way for kids to go on campus and see if they really like it, because I think we missed that in the past when it was crazy and when, you know, kids were being recruited at the age of 10.
And, yeah.
You know, not visiting campuses, not, you know, really going on campus and understanding what it was. And they're so young. So I think this is a good
comp. I'd rather see this than the early recruiting. Like, if we just do camps, that's fine. The early recruiting to me was always, and if there's still something that goes on in football and other sports, it just makes me like cringe, to be honest, because I didn't even know what's happening for breakfast at age 10, yet alone picking a college. But so I think the camps is, if we have to, you know, bend somewhere, I'm fine with this. But it's interesting because you're seeing kids flying all over the country to these camps. I mean, they're investing a lot of money to go. And so that's an interesting part of it too. But more power to you if you have the money to send your 14-year-old like, you know, 2,000 miles for a camp. That's great. But again, it's a good thing. I mean, the more kids can get around college players and get exposed to the game, as long as it's kind of fun and a little bit less stressful, I'm all for that.
And the kids get to meet their heroes too. So that's a really cool thing about it. And they get to meet the players and, you know, the ones they see on television. Like, you know, what if you see Jocelyn Allo at the World Series, or Kinzie Hansen, or you know, Montana Fouts that they got to watch on television. So they're able to actually meet their heroes in person. So that's a really cool part about it. And I think that's really important that our game kind of took a step back and realized that this early recruiting was a little bit, well, it was outrageous. So check out those fall camps. We've been noticing them, like Ree said, all across the country. I think there's fall camps every day in a different university. So
if anyone wants to out there volunteer, like, go on, like, you know how you try to visit every Major League Baseball stadium? If you want to try to do a camp thing, and we'll do like a first person with you, if your kid's doing all these camps, I'm happy to write that story. Contact us, D1 Softball, Rhiannon Podkey, anyone get in touch. I'd love to kind of get the experience of a camper that's been to like, you know, 10 or 12 of these things. That would be awesome. And if you live in a certain area of the country, you can hit a few, and, you know, if you got the money and the time, man, you can make a good little hopscotch everywhere. So fun.
Yeah. Well, that's our fall camps report from D1Softball.com. I'm sure there's going to be more of those. And check out all the four fall reports on D1Softball. We've got loads of content up on the site. Super excited about our new Players Society, which will be launching early next year, and all of our signees. We've got Alex Stracco, Janae Jefferson, Kinzie Hansen, and we're adding a few more hopefully this week. So stay tuned for those big names that will be announced as soon as we put them up on D1 Softball. Head on over to the site, subscribe. Again, you can get 20% off an annual subscription by using Podcast 20. Find us wherever you get your podcasts on Apple, and you can download it directly from the site. Like, rate, review. And let us know if you have any questions. You can email us at info@d1softball.com. And I believe that's it for the week. Ree, any final comments?
No, just, like you said, just rate, review, subscribe. You can, you know, drop comments anywhere. You can tweet us. You can put them in the comment section. We're, you know, we hope to do these podcasts so you can get some information, meet new people. And we want to make sure we're catering to what you want to hear about. So let us know and make sure to subscribe. The only way we can keep this thing going and keep those fall reports going is if you subscribe. And again, I'm making my early holiday push. Give the gift of D1 Softball. So you don't have, there's no supply chain issues. There's no, you know, you don't have to worry about if it's stuck in the Long Beach port. It's going to come right to your inbox right away. And if you have a softball lover, subscribe. It's a really cool gift. And we'll definitely have the content because we got tons of fall reports still to come.
All right. That's it for Season 2, Episode 5 of the D1 Softball Podcast. I'm your host, Tara Henry, joined by Rhiannon Podkey. Have a wonderful day.